but there is something else that is implied. Implied is the general supposition that the science of astronomy represents all that is most accurate, most exacting, painstaking, semi-religious in human thought, and is therefore authoritative. Anybody who has not been through what I've been through, in investigating this subject, would ask what are the bases and what is the consistency of the science of astronomy. The miserable, though at times amusing, confusions of thought that I find in this field of supposed research word my inquiry differently what of dignity, or even of decency, is in it? Phantom dogmas, with their tails clutching at vacancies, are coiled around our data. Serpents of pseudo-thought are stifling history. They are squeezing thou shalt not, upon development. New lands and the horrors and lights, explosions and music of them, rabbles of hellhounds and the march of military angels. But they are promised lands, and first must we traverse a desert. There is ahead of us a waste of parallaxes and spectrograms and triangulations. It may be weary going through a waste of astronomic determinations, but that depends. If out of a dreary, academic zenith shower betrayals of frailty, folly, and falsification, they will be manna to our malices. Or sterile demonstrations be warmed by our cheerful cynicisms into delicious little lies blossoms and fruits of unexpected oases. Rocks to strike with our suspicions and the gush of exposures foaming with new implications. Tyrants, dragons, giants and, if all be dispatched with the skill and the might and the triumph over awful odds of the hero who himself tells his story. I hear three yells from some hitherto undiscovered, grotesque critter at the very entrance of the desert. 2. Prediction confirmed. Another verification. A third verification of prediction. Three times, in spite of its long-established sobriety, the Journal of the Franklin Institute, Volumes 106 and 107, reels with an astronomer's exhilarations. He might exult and indulge himself, and that would be no affair of ours, and, in fact, we'd like to see everybody happy, perhaps, but it is out of these three chanticleerities by Professor Pliny Chase that we materialize our opinion that, so far as methods and strategies are concerned, no particular differences can be noted between astrologers and astronomers, and that both represent engulfment in dark ages. Lord Bacon pointed out that the astrologers had squirmed into prestige and emolument by shooting at marks, disregarding their misses, and recording their hits with unseemly advertisement. When, in August, 1878, Professor Swift and Professor Watson said that, during an eclipse of the sun, they had seen two luminous bodies that might be planets between Mercury and the Sun, Professor Chase announced that, 5 years before, he had made a prediction, and that it had been confirmed by the positions of these bodies. Three times, in capital letters, he screamed, or announced, according to one's sensitiveness, or prejudices, that the new planets were in the exact positions of his calculations. Professor Chase wrote that, before his time, there had been two great instances of astronomic calculation confirmed, the discovery of Neptune and the discovery of the asteroidal belt, a claim that is disingenuously worded. If by mathematical principles, or by any other definite principles, there has ever been one great, or little, instance of astronomic discovery by means of calculations, confusion must destroy us, in the introductory position that we take, or expose our irresponsibility, and vitiate all that follows, that our data are oppressed by a tyranny of false announcements, that there never has been an astronomic discovery other than the observational or the accidental. In The Story of the Heavens, Sir Robert Ball's opinion of the discovery of Neptune is that it is a triumph unparalleled in the annals of science. He lavishes the great astronomer Le Verrier, buried for months in profound meditations the dramatic moment Le Verrier rises from his calculations and points to the sky low, there a new planet is found. My desire is not so much to agonize over the single fraudulencies or delusions, as to typify the means by which the science of astronomy has established and maintained itself. According to Le Verrier, there was a planet external to Uranus, according to Hansen, there were two, according to Airy, doubtful if there were one. One planet was found, so calculated Leverrier, in his profound meditations. Suppose two had been found, confirmation of the brilliant computations by Hansen. None the opinion of the great astronomer, Sir George Airy. Leverrier calculated that the hypothetic planet was at a distance from the Sun, within the limits of 35 and 37.9 times this Earth's distance from the Sun. The new planet was found in a position said to be 30 times this Earth's distance from the Sun. The discrepancy was so great that, in the United States, astronomers refused to accept that Neptune had been discovered by means of calculation, see such publications as the American Journal of Science, of the period. Upon August 29, 1849, Dr. Bobinet read, to the French Academy, a paper in which he showed that, by the observations of 3 years, the revolution of Neptune would have to be placed at 165 years. Between the limits of 207 and 233 years was the period that Leverrier had calculated. Simultaneously, in England, Adams had calculated. Upon September 2, 1846, after he had, for at least a month, been charting the stars in the region toward which Adams had pointed, Professor Challis wrote to Sir George Airy that this work would occupy his time for 3 more months. This indicates the extent of the region toward which Adams had pointed. The discovery of the asteroids, or in Professor Chase's not very careful language, the discovery of the asteroidal belt as deduced from Bode's law. We learn that Baron von Zach had formed a society of 24 astronomers to search, in accordance with Bode's law, for a planet and not a group, not an asteroidal belt between Jupiter and Mars. The astronomers had organized, dividing the zodiac into 24 zones, assigning each zone to an astronomer. They searched. They found not one asteroid. 700 or 800 are now known. Philosophical Magazine, 12-62. That Piazzi, the discoverer of the first asteroid, had not been searching for a hypothetic body, as deduced from Bode's law, but, upon an investigation of his own, had been charting stars in the constellation Taurus, night of January 1, 1801. He noticed a light that he thought had moved, and, with his mind a blank, so far as asteroids and brilliant deductions were concerned, announced that he had discovered a comet. As an instance of the crafty way in which some astronomers now tell the story, see Sir Robert Ball's Story of the Heavens, p. 230. The organization of the astronomers of Lilienthal, but never a hint that Piazzi was not one of them. The search for a small planet was soon rewarded by a success that has rendered the evening of the first day of the 19th century memorable in astronomy. Ball tells of Piazzi's charting of the stars, and makes it appear that Piazzi had charted stars as a means of finding asteroids deductively, rewarded soon by success, whereas Piazzi had never heard of such a search, and did not know an asteroid when he saw one. This laborious and accomplished astronomer had organized an ingenious system of exploring the heavens, which was eminently calculated to discriminate a planet among the starry host. At length he was rewarded by a success which amply compensated him for all his toil. Professor Chase, these two great instances not of mere discovery, but of discovery by means of calculation, according to him now the subject of his supposition that he, too, could calculate triumphantly, the verification depended upon the accuracy of Professor Swift and Professor Watson in recording the positions of the bodies that they had announced. Side Real Messenger, 6-84. Professor Colbert, superintendent of Dearborn Observatory, leader of the party of which Professor Swift was a member, says that the observations by Swift and Watson agreed, because Swift had made his observations agree with Watson's. The accusation is not that Swift had falsely announced a discovery of two unknown bodies, but that his precise determining of positions had occurred after Watson's determinations had been published. Popular Astronomy, 7-13. Professor Azaf Hall writes that, several days after the eclipse, Professor Watson told him that he had seen a luminous body near the Sun, and that his declaration that he had seen two unknown bodies was not made until after Swift had been heard from. Perched upon two delusions, Professor Chase crowed his false raptures. The unknown bodies, whether they ever had been in the orbit of his calculations or not, were never seen again. So it is our expression that hosts of astronomers calculate, and calculation mad, calculate and calculate and calculate, and that, when one of them does point within 600 million miles, by conventional measurements, of something that is found, he is the leverrier of the textbooks, that the others are the professor chases not of the textbooks. As to most of us, the symbols of the infinitesimal calculus humble independent thinking into the conviction that used to be enforced by drops of blood from a statue. In the farrago and conflicts of daily lives, it is relief to feel such a rapport with finality, in a religious sense, or in a mathematical sense. So then, if the seeming of exactness in astronomy be either infamously, or carelessly, and laughingly, brought about by the connivances of which Swift and Watson were accused, and if the prestige of astronomy be founded upon nothing but huge capital letters and exclamation points, or upon the disproportionality of balancing one leverrier against hundreds of chases, it may not be better that we should know this, if then to those of us who, in the religious sense, have nothing to depend upon, comes deprivation of even this last, lingering seeming of foundation, or seeming existence of exactness and realness, somewhere.